Good morning, everyone. Couple of coffees on.
Okay, that'd be great. We'll begin. Yeah?
No.
Okay, let's start. Oh, I have to send this thing. Gotta wait 1 second. Going live. Let's share this. To WhatsApp. And Monday night share. YouTube link. We're live. And there we go. Okay. All right. So, everybody have the Gemara sheet? There's actually an extra Gemara sheet if somebody needs one. It's over here. On the back of one of your pages, if you have two.
So you use
the back of that one. There you go. Okay. So we're taking a look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin right now. Hi, Andrew. Take a look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin. We're on Ayin Aleph Hamad Aleph. I know you can't see the number at the top of the page, but you have to trust me that it's Ayin Aleph. We've actually done already, I think we did Samech Tet, we did Ayin, now we're doing Ayin Aleph. I think we already did Ayin Bet, so we're kind of out of order. But this is Ayin Aleph. We're actually going to only do one side. I think that's all we're going to have time for today. Ayin Aleph Hamad Aleph. And we're in the Mishnah. We're going to do two Mishnayot. The Mishnah is like the second to last thin line. Everybody see it? It says Ganav Mishal Aviv. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So we're continuing in the Sugya of Bensorah Moreh, which is the name of the Perek. And this is the last few Mishnayot that deal with Bensorah Moreh before we go into Baba Machteret, which we already did. And it says as follows. Ganav Mishal Aviv. V'achal b'reshut aviv, mishal acherim, v'achal b'reshut acherim, mishal acherim, v'achal b'reshut aviv, einu na'asa b'mtzorah moreh, ad she'ignov mishal aviv, v'achal b'reshut acherim. So, we've already seen how delicate the din of b'mtzorah moreh is, and how, you know, most cases will not be a b'mtzorah moreh, no matter what the child does. If the child is not the right age, if the child, it depends on what the child ate, how much of it he ate, in what context, who was there when he was eating it, what they were doing while he was eating it. All these things matter. And now we're about to find another thing that matters. Where did he get the food? The commissioner says that if he stole the food or the money for the food, he stole the money for the food from his father's house and then ate it in his father's house, or if he stole the money from someone else, a random person, somebody outside the yeshuv, and then he ate it outside the yeshuv, he didn't eat it in his own house, then in both of those cases, he's not a ben sorer moreh. The only case where he's a ben sorer moreh is when he stole it from his father, and he eats it outside the yeshuv. Okay, so he steals it from his father's house, and then he leaves Ranana, and he goes and he eats it in Tel Aviv. He takes the money and he goes to Mike's place. That's in Yerushalayim, right? He goes somewhere else. Goes to Mike's place in Tel Aviv. Goes to Mike's place, and he goes and he buys himself some tartemar of Italian meat and wine, and that's what he does. That's the only circumstance where he's going to be chayav. Gemara is going to try to figure out why this is. That's what the Mishnah says. Then the Mishnah continues and says another rule. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Achi, Igno Mishal Aviv, U Mishalimo. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says that in order to be chayev, he has to steal it from money which is somehow belonging, or he has to steal from both his mother and his father. He has to steal from both of them somehow. There's a lot of extra conditions. Why these extra conditions exist? That's what's going to be our job to figure out in the Gemara. Okay? So, start with the Gemara. Ganav mishal aviv v'yachal b'reshut aviv af agav d'shchiach lei bayit. Okay. Why is it not good enough to steal from your father and then eat in your father's house? Sounds like it's pretty bad, no? Sounds like it's the worst thing you could do. So the answer is because after stealing from your father, which is something that is easy to do, right? Stealing from somebody's father is the easiest thing to do. It's, you always have access to that money. However, when you eat it in the house, you're embarrassed. And so he might be willing to do it once, but he's not willing to continue along this path. That's what Rashi says on the last wide line at the top. Mitpached me'aviv shelo yavin hilkach lo mimshech. Which is a concept that we've already seen in previous shiurim. Mimshech is he won't become addicted. He won't become used to it. In order for somebody to become a Ben Sora Mora, he has to engage in activity which is sustainable, something that he will continue to do. Does anybody remember the other conditions where we saw that was the case? Where if it was something that he's unlikely to continue to do, then he's not a Ben Sora Mora.
Yeah, it was the size of the meat, or the top of the meat, or
the price of the meat, and also how good the meat was.
Yeah.
Right? If the meat is not very good, then it won't catch. Yeah. Or if it's too expensive, and it's too much of a bother, you know, you can't rob a bank every time you want to have a meal. So if that's what you're used to, $2,000 shekel steaks, then you're not going to become a bensora or more from that, because it's just not practical. It's not cost effective. But if you get used to, 75 shekel steaks, or steak that is, not cooked so well, then you'll be used to it. And another condition, apparently, of something that it's unlikely that you're going to get used to it is eating in your father's home, because it's too embarrassing. It's too much of a hassle. He keeps looking at you. He knows that you stole his money, and it's embarrassing.
How can you steal something in your father's house without taking it out the house? Surely, as long as it's in the house, it's still in your
No, it means you're eating.
Search.
You're eating in the house. In other words, you stole from your father. Let's say you went to the store, you bought a steak, and then you went home and you're eating it in the dining room.
So you didn't take the steak from the house?
No.
Okay.
Well, you bought the steak somewhere else.
We're going to see.
Because then you couldn't. Can you steal from your father without taking it out the house? As long as in the house, it's still his reshut and still belongs to him.
You can still steal, yeah. I mean, how are you going to... Yeah, you can steal.
How do you demonstrate that you've stolen it?
I mean, if you're stealing food, then it's unlikely because his food is kind of your food.
Yeah.
Right? But his money is not your money. So you would have to leave the house to buy something and then come back.
Another thing, how can you steal from your mother? How can a mother have money that's...
Very good. Very good. So hold off on that thought.
If we're talking about a 13-year-old, he's usually eating in his parents' home anyway, and they are somehow responsible for him.
That's right.
Where does the stealing come in?
He goes into their wallet. He goes into the bedroom. He sneaks into his father's wallet. He takes 300 shekels, and he walks out. We're going to see whether it's only money. Yeah.
The product itself.
I also have another question. Further to what Pankos just said, when you're talking about a 13-year-old kid or something like that, I don't think there's an age given here.
Right, so in a previous show we saw that it's between 13 and 13 and a half, basically.
Oh, okay.
He has to be 13 and about 13 and 3 months, I think, if I remember correctly.
So
it's a very small window.
Okay.
So again, Ganav Mishal Aviv V'Achal B'Shut Aviv Av Agav D'Shchiach Lei, even though it's easy for him because the money is available, but he'll be scared. Mishal Achayim V'Achal B'Shut Acherim Av Agav D'Lo Bait Lo Shchiach Lei. Why is he not going to be a Mitzvah Moriah if he steals from others and eats in others and eats outside of his house?
It's too difficult.
For the opposite reason. He has no problem with it from a embarrassment perspective because he doesn't know anybody, but it's hard. In other words, he has to break into people's homes. It's much easier to just sneak into in the bedroom and take money from over there. So it's unlikely he's going to continue in his life of crime if it entails breaking and entering all the time.
Well, why is this part of Ben Sora Mora? He's just a thief.
The idea is that we're not worried about what he's done now, right? We know that. What he's done now is not punishable by death. What we're worried is what he's going to become. So it very much interests us that the conditions that are being created right now are conditions which will be sustainable. Which means it has to be something that he's happy to continue doing, and it has to be something that is easy to continue doing.
Something he has to do to his parents.
No, he's not doing it to his parents.
He's stealing. Ben Sora Mora from stealing from people.
Yes, in theory. But what the Gemara is teaching us is only stealing from your parents, but specifically because it's easy to steal from your parents. Not because you've done something to your parents.
Well, your parents will notice when your father goes bad to his wallet that 300 shekels is missing.
You may not. Now,
but the theft specifically related to food.
In the end, he has to eat. And we actually saw a different Mishnah that described what he eats. It has to be good quality meat, and it has to be wine. Good quality wine. But not too good quality.
Because in theory, even if he steals from his parents and he goes out.
No. And he goes in and buys a car.
No, and he buys food. No.
Right.
His parents, in theory, are responsible for feeding him, whether at home or outside.
So that's
true.
He's
stealing from his parents, and he's eating at home. He's saying it's not.
It's not.
Because he'll have busha.
Yes.
But on the flip side, the person is, the parents are still responsible for feeding.
Right.
If he steals it home and goes out, then he's not eating food at home, but he's eating food out. So it's still...
That's when he's going to be chayav.
You can't eat two or three portions of food. But
No, that's exactly when he's going to be chayav. If he steals at home,
yeah,
and then he goes and eats out. Because then he's got both. It's easy for him to do it, and he's not going to be embarrassed when he goes to do it at the end. So that's the sweet spot, right? That's what we're going for. That's the Mishnah. That's
what I'm saying. If you steal, right, the parents don't have to outlay the money for the food that he would have eaten in any case. So maybe he's eating slightly better quality food.
The point isn't whether or not the parents lost any money. That's not the point. The point is he started a life of crime. And that's what we're concerned with.
I can see it much, it just seems more logical that the person's going to steal from someone else. Right, and he's going to then eat somewhere else. That seems to me more of a slaughtered love of crime than stealing home.
But what the Gemara is suggesting is that no, because it's hard to do breaking and entering all the time. It's unlikely that at this age, he may do it once for a chavaya, but is he going to continue to do it? Now, maybe.
That's the whole point.
He might. But
that's the whole point.
What?
Because Ben Tzor Amore is because we're afraid that you're going to get used to it.
Right. So you need a gateway. You need a gateway drug. That's the point. The Gemara is very concerned with the gateway.
Stealing from others and eating other places is not the gateway.
No, because it's too hard. It's too much of a hassle to steal from others. That's the point. Okay? It's not the Chicago inner city over here. Right? It's Narda. And, you know. So exactly that's how the Gemara concludes. It says, obviously, by the way, he does exact opposite. If he steals from others and eats in his father's house, then obviously, lo shchiach leu bayit. That's for sure not. So, ad sheignov mishal aviv, yochal b'shut acherim, de shchiach leu lo bayit. It has to be that he steals from home and he eats out. Because then, it's easy for him to continue, and he's not embarrassed when he ends up eating. So that's the conclusion. Now, the second half, and this is going to point out what Rabbi very astutely pointed out. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Achi, Gnom Mishal Aviv, Mishal Imo. The second din was that he stole from his father and his mother. The Gemara says, wait a second. Imo, Minala. How does she have?
Money.
Any money. How does his mother have any money?
She bought it from home.
But it doesn't matter. All her money, frankly, belongs to her husband. That's the way these things work. That's the way things worked. Technically, it's how they still work, but it's But what it means is halachically, that's how they work. Now, but there is an easy answer to this question.
But look, it's not uncommon for
whatever.
Yes, that's one possibility. But there's an easier answer to the question: how could a woman end up having money and still be the mother of a child? And she doesn't have to worry about her husband owning her money. She could be divorced. She could be divorced. If the parents were divorced, then he could steal from both his father and his mother, and the money would belong to his mother, right? So there seems to be an assumption that that's not the case over here, and we're going to see a little bit later, we'll see that's a pretty decent assumption. Why that might be, maybe if they're divorced, he can't be a Ben Tzor Amore. We'll see why maybe that might be the case later. Or it may be that the Gemara just didn't want to give that answer.
Hasim, which can remain the property of
The Nechsei Malog, Nechsei Tzon Barzel, yeah, but I don't think she has access to those things.
Isn't
right
Milog
now.
Isn't Milog the opposite? Milog is her assets that he gets the fruit of.
Right, Nechsei Tzon Barzel, I think, is what she retains. But I don't think she can do anything with it until after, I think, if I remember correctly. Anyways, I think it like it goes into like a trust, like as long as she's married, nobody can do anything, but then after she gets divorced, she gets to get it back. So
there's also a way that he doesn't have to support her, and she can she work that.
So you're going in the right direction. So the Gemara says it's going to give a couple of possibilities. The first possibility it says is imo minala mashikanta isha kanabala. That's the rule. Whatever the woman acquires, the husband acquires. So how can she have anything? Am Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Misuda Hamuchenet LaAviv uLeImo. So, what did he do? He stole food. He went into the kitchen, right, and he saw that it's their anniversary, right, and the husband has prepared a steak dinner for him and his wife, and it's for both of them. They're both going to be eating it. You can't say it doesn't belong to her. It's hers. It's not his. She's not eating his food, and so he goes in and he steals the steak. And then he runs out of Ra'anana, he runs to Tel Aviv, and he goes eat it at his friend's house. Boom. Got it. Fathers and mothers. Does that work? So the Gemara says, no, that doesn't work. Why? Because V'hama Rabbi Chanan bar Mulda Amar Rav Huna Eino Chayav Ad Sheikna Basar Bezol V'yochal Yayin Bezol V'yishte. No, because he's not going to be Chayav until he acquires meat for cheap and he drinks wine for cheap V'yishte. Ela ima midmei sud. So why does that ruin everything? Because what does it say? Ad she yikneh means that there is such a situation, not that it necessarily has to be that way, but there is a situation where he buys food and drink, and it has to be food and drink that belongs, it has to be with the money that belongs both to the mother and the father. That was Rabbi Yehuda's, Rabbi Yehuda's condition.
And if he sold the steak, sold it at the market because it's a good steak, and then used the money to buy cheap food.
I don't know, but it seems like they're trying to keep things simple. They're trying to say that, no, there's a situation where he steals money from the mother and the father, and then he goes and he buys meat, and that's how he acquires the meat. Okay? So then that throws that one out of the door. So now we have to go back to a situation where we have the mother actually owning money. There's going to be two answers to this question. One answer is, Ela'ema midmei su'd ha'muchenet la'aviv ulimo. It's a modification of the previous answer. It's not the actual food that was prepared, but it's from the money that was set aside. There's a chiddush, because it's basically saying that even though it's money, since half of it's going to be used for the mother's meal, it's considered hers. Okay? So it's a little bit of a stretch in terms of, you know, if we look at this very, very technically. But nevertheless, the Gemara thinks that that is an acceptable answer. That it belongs to her because it's going to be used to buy her food. And then finally, the second answer, V'ibaytema, da'akni la acher, v'amar la almanat she'ein leba'alech reshut bahen. How did she get money? Because someone went over to her and said, I'm giving you now 100 shekel, but it belongs to you, and it cannot belong to your husband. I'm giving it to you on condition that it goes directly to you and does not go to your husband.
Is that allowed?
Apparently, the Gemara is assuming that that works.
Okay.
Take a look at Rashi. I believe. Rashi. No? Is it there?
Yeah.
Where?
The
ilo amar lahachi zacha bahen baal de lo adif mimitziata. Look, if you don't say that, then the baal definitely gets it. Oh, by the way, we should read the previous Rashi. He explains a little bit how the previous answer works, right? Midmei suda hamuchenet shayu ma'ot muchanim liknot meam suda. There was money that was prepared for buying the food laviv ulimo, their anniversary. The kevin del kach nizdamnu mishal imo karinen behu. It's called hers. Why though? There is a reason. Right? Why? Because why does the husband get all of her money? How does that work? Because he is chayav to give her sustenance. So it's almost as if to say that there's money set aside for him and for her, but that money that's set aside from her, it's really hers because it's going to be used to buy food, which means it's her money. So it's almost like this idea that any money that's set aside to buy the wife food is her money.
Some of it is.
That whatever's going to be used for her is hers. Because it belongs to her. That's the deal she made. She made a deal with him that you take care of me and you can have my any money that I get from work that I do or that people give to me or that I find. That's how it works. They have a deal. So according to the deal, it's her money. That's the first answer. Second answer is that there's some kind of a way that you can make a t'nai such that the money will not go to the husband. This is a big chiddush, no? That idea.
Sounds kind of like me.
But tell you, Rabbi, I mean, it's Rabbi Yossi. It's not a chachamim opinion. It might be Rabbi Yossi's opinion.
Good. So if you take a look at Tosfos, before we go to the sheet, we're going to go directly to the source sheet in a second. If you take a look at Tosfos, he says, "Zuk yezu kirav sheshet the perakam of the kedushin the amar the rabbanan ahani le tanae." Yeah, this is according to Rav Sheshet, who says that this kind of tanae will work. Aval Rabbi Eliezer sphere le dafilu ki agavna, even like this Ain kinyan le'eved below rabo. A parallel case to the case with the woman is if you try to give money to a slave, it will go automatically to the master, right? That won't make any people making any actual connections between those two cases, but they are similar cases in this sense. And so he says, according to Rav Sheshet, it works. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it doesn't work. Ain kinyan le'eved below rabo. Ain kinyan le'isha below bala. Mikama kab madnitin lo tikshet. Dahava mishani b'dmei seudah muchanet le'imo. Says, it gives that as one answer. Inami Rabbi Elazar, have a moki la bishana. Or Rabbi Elazar, in other words, the way to read this Gemara is one answer, which is good according to everybody, is that it's money that was going to be used for a meal that was going to be for both of them. And another answer is maybe the Mishnah is according to Rabbi Elazar, according to Rav Sheshet, let's say. According to Rav Sheshet, Inami Rabbi Elazar, have a moki la bishana tan la bala. That's Rabbi Elazar, not Rabbi Elazar. Confusing, I know. That's Rabbi Elazar. Who holds like Rav Sheshet, I guess. Bishanatan la bala da Rabbi Elazar who da amr becheska sabat and echadze vechadze kanta veina bal ochal per. Okay, either way, Tosaf seems to be saying very similar to what Rabbi is saying, which is that maybe we don't pass like this Gemara. It's okay that the Gemara should say this as an answer in the Mishnah, but maybe it's not the final conclusion of Shas necessarily. However, if you look at the sheets, and Usher, you're going to have to look at it with me. We're going to do the next Mishnah and Gemara as well, but since we're already here, might as well take a break from the Gemara. And take a look at the Yad Ramah. That's Rav Meir Abu Lafia. We only have his commentary on a full commentary on Sanhedrin, and some on Bava Batra, and we have some of his letters that he wrote. Abu Lafia lived in Spain. He was an early Rishon. So somebody's rabbi that I don't remember. Oh, okay. Yad Ramah. So he wrote as follows. He says, and this statement is quoted, he lived even before the Ramban and his Rishonim, because they quote him. He says, Miha, from here, Shaminan demand Akni Midi Lietata, Amanat Shein Labal Rashut, Havya Akna. Rav Ramah says, we can learn from here that if a man gives something to a wife, to somebody's wife, Amanat, but it doesn't go to the husband, then that works. So Rav Ramah sees it as correct halacha. Okay? And it also works from a man to an eved, or from a man to a creditor. Yeah, somebody who owes money. So in other words, let's say Rashi owed money to Pinchas, and I said Rashi, Rashi's out of money. You know, he's scrounging around to find money to pay Pinchas back. And I said, listen, Rashi, I'm going to give you 100 shekel, but on condition it doesn't go to Pinchas. Because we're in brogas, and I don't want Pinchas to have that money. I want to go directly to you, Rashi, because I like you. Okay. Does that work? It seems surprising that it should work. It should be that anything Rashi acquires should go directly. Pinchas has a lien on Rashi's money. Mm-hmm. Anything I give Rashi should go to Pinchas. But apparently, Rabbi Rabbi Lafia says over here that works. That Tanai works. Same thing. Yeah. A Tanai like this overrides the Shiabud. Big Chiddush. Now do we pass it like this? Guess what? Take a look at the Shulchan Aruch on the left side. A person gives a gift to somebody on the Nath that the husband doesn't get, or the husband or the Baal doesn't get Rashut. Kana Baal. Varei hi kisharna. If you give a proper matana, the proper tonight, and you say it should go to you, kagon shiomala, for example, it works. If you make such a tonight, it will work. What's in the Schweppes? Which kind of Schweppes is that?
Peach.
I'll take some of that, please. Thank you.
Is that just with a woman, or is it also with a slave and a child?
Also with the slave and the child, also with the creditor, yeah. I'm looking at the one. Here it's with the woman, but it also is with the slave and everything. Yeah.
Okay. Sure, it doesn't say explicitly.
No, it doesn't. Okay. It's Ebenezer. It's talking about a woman and a husband.
Going back to what you said before, how it's okay for somebody to give somebody money, I'll tonight. Okay, as long as you don't give it to, I guess in this case, Pinchas.
Right.
What would happen? Say I did give it to Pinchas.
Good question.
Am I hiding something? Did I do something wrong that I
think
violated,
that the gift would have to go back to the original owner?
Like, in other words, I violated a contract.
The guy can come to Pinchas and say, that's my money you have, you have to give it back.
And how
that's
does the
happens.
Guy ever know? Or he doesn't know.
Well, he doesn't know. You did something wrong.
You don't know you can't get it back.
Yeah.
I mean, this whole thing, it sounds very dodgy, if you want to understand.
It's not... With things like this, well, actually, no. I mean, this could really happen. This could easily happen. This is a real case. But yeah, it's a way of giving to somebody that you don't want them to look. Let's think. You can think of a. You can easily think of a real situation. You know, you have a.
You know why?
You have a mother. You have the wife's mother, right? The wife's father, rather. The wife's father wants to give a gift to her daughter. His daughter doesn't like the husband. He knows that he gives the money properly to his daughter. She's going to give to her husband. He doesn't like the husband, so he wants his daughter to benefit from it. So he gives the gift and says, I want you to keep it.
But everything the daughter has, money-wise, belongs to the husband.
So the point is, apparently over here, there's a chiddush that the Tanai works. You're right, we still have to figure out why. Right? We still have to figure out why, but that's the chiddush that Rami Abulafia says that Tosas doesn't seem to agree with. Right? Not all the Rishonim agree with this. The Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin like this, Yad Ramah.
No, Tosfos didn't say doesn't disagree with it.
He says our Gemara is not like that Gemara.
Okay.
And it sounds like he's uncomfortable with this with this Gemara.
Truly, this comes up. This comes up elsewhere. I mean, it's quite a fundamental principle in terms of.
It does. Tosfos told you where it came up. Yeah, it comes up in other places. Now, two late Achronim, right? You have the Avni Miluim. Avni Miluim wrote another famous work that you probably have heard of.
Where did
if you haven't heard of Avni Miluim. He wrote the sefer called the Ksot HaChoshen. Right? You probably heard on Ezekiel. Yeah, the Ksais. The Ksais. As well as the Sheif Shmeis, I believe. Unless it's the Shach, but I think it's the Ksos. I think his name is Aryeh Friedman, I believe, but I could be mistaken. If somebody wants to look that up, they can. The Ksos' name, I think it's Aryeh Friedman. It's wasted on me. And
That's for me.
Whiskey is flowing.
Anybody else would like a glass of whiskey?
Would like a dog.
If you're listening on YouTube, you should have whiskey right now, along with everybody else. L'chaim.
It's your birthday.
L'chaim. Mazel tov. Birthday. Thank you.
Mazel tov.
Yesterday. Thank you. Aryeh Heller. Aryeh Heller.
Anybody not what whiskey?
Andrew's mother's 95th birthday.
Really?
It was last
Andrew,
week.
It's your mother's 95th birthday?
What year that was 14, for the British?
97.
David just said.
97.
When was it?
Last Shabbat.
Friday. Oh, mine was on Sunday. Beautiful. January 11th.
Yeah.
Very nice. Okay, so let's take a look. There's two answers that we have over here. Very interesting answers. Anybody want to try to take a stab at it before we look at the answers? How would this work? Why would this work? If you're listening on YouTube, you can try to chat and put in an answer if you want.
My guess is that anybody is permitted to make a contract. At the end of the day, it's a contract.
Isn't there already a contract between the wife and the husband?
Yes, but sometimes certain things do override it. She has a right. She's not his slave.
That's true.
She's not in every
something. We could conceive of something overriding it. The question is why this should.
No, it's like any maternal. No, it has nothing to do with the wife. It has to do with the person who gave it.
But it does have to do with
the wife.
I can't give you something altnai that you are a woman. I mean, I can't give you altnai that this is by definition.
I'll deny that you run a marathon. It doesn't belong to you until you run a marathon.
Okay.
I'll give it to you, right? It's my tnai. It has nothing...
But it doesn't belong to me until I do the marathon. So it can't belong to the woman until she's full part of the man. As in...
No. All he has to do is keep it for herself. That's what she has to do. She has to use it on her own.
But by definition, she can't.
No, she has to use it.
But then isn't she... But whose is it, though? The question is, whose is it? Why isn't it his?
When she uses it, it becomes hers. But until she hasn't used it...
Kol ma shakana isha kana bala.
So what if it belonged to the husband, but she can't own anything, but he has the restriction that he can only use it for her? So it's like a trust. Okay. He's formal.
Right. But then it's not in her possession. It's not in her possession.
He would want.
That's not good enough. It won't be good enough for our sugya.
Right? She has beneficial ownership, and we need legal talk.
Because he would be willing to mavater on the ownership so she could keep it. So in carrying on from what
does he have an option like that?
Yes, no. Because he would rather she has it than she didn't have it. Therefore, he can do a.
He can mochel.
Mochel. Okay. That's what I'm looking for.
Anything else? What if he doesn't know about it?
Well, he would.
What if he doesn't?
No, but even
why
if
would
not,
he? Why do you assume he would?
Because he would rather she had it than she.
No, but hold on. The father gives the money to his daughter because he doesn't like the husband.
Yeah.
She's not going to tell him about it.
Yeah.
Agreed, but.
So he didn't have a chance to be mevater.
But he would mevater if he didn't know about it.
So we're like Zaki and Adam, so like we're doing it on his behalf?
Yes.
All right. I think that's unlikely.
Father brought
it for me.
Okay. It doesn't sound. I mean, it seems strange that it would work with his consent when he doesn't know about it. Meaning if you're lying, I understand what you're saying. You're saying, he can be mochel, so let him be mochel. Fine, he can be mochel, but he's not. I think it would work if he knew about it, but he doesn't, so how could it work? All right, so here there are two answers. First answer is given by the Avni Milin. It says, Kol zman shelon odu lebal, lo zacha adayin. As long as he doesn't know about it, he can't have it. That's the first thing. V'im kein, kad mazachiyat ha'isha, he says almost the opposite of what you're saying, Asher. He's saying the principle of kol masha kanta isha kana bala, that works when he becomes aware of the thing that she acquired. And since it's given to her first, and there's a tnai that he can't have it, she immediately acquires it.
Why, even without the tnai, just someone who doesn't know about it, it does.
So it does sound like he's saying that she actually acquires it first before he gets it. I agree with you. So he says, okay, that we're not going to go into.
It's written in the
Ketubah.
It's written before they get married.
Right.
Everything that belongs to the wife belongs to the husband. That's the tnai at the Ketubah.
Yes.
Now, so you don't have to know about it for that. That's the tnai. Anything that you get belongs to the husband.
It sounds like the Avni Milim is suggesting that in principle he could only acquire things that he knows about. And since she owned it, but you know what? Even leave that alone. I think there's a simple way of saying, I'm not sure he had to phrase it this way. I would have phrased it in a different way. I would have said, similar to what Rashi said, some things supersede other things. Why do we assume that the principle of Kol Masha Kanta Isha Kana Bala overrides the tnai that this guy is making? He made the tnai first, so to speak, in this case, right? Before he gave the gift, he made the tnai, I want it to go to you. Now it can't go to the husband. It's true that the husband has a lien, so to speak, on her stuff, but this sits outside of that lien because there's a tnai on it. Why is the tnai not stronger? It should be. Maybe it is stronger. That seems to be what Avni Milim is suggesting.
Can I throw in something? You also mentioned, you know, use the mashal like it's her father giving it to her. There is a different inyan here. It is her dad. There is kibud av.
I made that up.
Okay, you made that up. I mean, that in one case. Say it's the next door neighbor.
Yeah,
I
made that up.
I don't know. The guy down the street. I don't know. It's still a little weird for me, but okay. LG. But like, wouldn't a parent be somewhat of a different level?
No, maybe. But that's not the case over here. This is, you know, it could be the employer.
Can only work if there's a tie on the use. Because you can give somebody something and tonight that they use it for, whatever, right? So,
no,
it's not that the husband
use it for yourself.
Really, the husband really requires it, but the use can only be for her. So then, it's like she can only get benefit from it, but he actually owns it.
Ah, you're saying that the only thing that tonight actually accomplishes is that it keeps it. It makes sure that she gets to use it, but it doesn't actually belong to her. Okay, it doesn't seem to be what the Yad Rama is saying. Although you could fit that into the language of the Shulchan Aruch. That's not what the Yad Rama is saying. He's very clear. Now, the second answer is very interesting from the Birchas Avram, the Zervavam Erlanger, who's alive now. David, he lives in Yerushalayim. He teaches in Yerushalayim, Shiva. Avram Erlanger, we quote him very, very often. So he says, Nira de yesh levar dizchut ha'adon v'habal eino elo laharvicham v'lo lahavsid labal dinu le'isha. So he's suggesting that the idea of kol ma shakanta isha kana bala is not really something that you find in the ketubah, Yoel. At least that's not where parah come from. It's gzeirat ha-ketuv. God said that we're going to give the ability to the husband to acquire things, or even if you say that it is, you know what, we can even say it's not gzeirat ha-ketuv. The principle behind it, though, is that the husband should acquire what the wife acquires because it's going to be good for him, right? So to make things better for him, because that's a good deal for him to make. He agrees to the deal to take care of her because he knows that he's going to get stuff, right? But, Erlanger says, Here's the chiddush. It's actually very, very reasonable. He says, look, at the end of the day, I give the money to the woman and I tell the woman, it's only for you. I am not giving it to you to give to your husband. Now what? If we want to say that, okay, it goes immediately to her husband, then guess what? Now Rashi's question kicks in. What happens if I give you money and I say, don't give it to Pinchas, and then you go ahead and you give it to Pinchas? What happens now?
It's a violation of the...
And what happens to the money?
Goes back to you.
Goes back to me. What happens if I give the money to the woman and then she goes and gives it to her husband? Or if her husband acquires it, what happens to the money? It goes back to me. In other words, the husband's never going to touch this money. If the husband's never going to touch this money, then maybe... doesn't apply, because the whole purpose of that is to get the husband money, but he's not going to get it anyways. The purpose of it isn't to deprive her. The purpose is to give him more stuff, but he's never going to get this stuff. So by reverse proxy, almost, it works. And it's not even negative Torah. And therefore, the Tanai will work. It's not a Tanai against the rules of the Torah. This will work for the Adon, it'll work for the husband, and it'll work for everything. Since he's never going to touch it, it's not part of their deal. And it's as if to say that we were kind of envisioning that the woman cannot acquire anything. But that's not true, and it's not what Rashi said. And it's not what Kol Ma Shekanta Yishekana Baala means. What it means is that after she acquires it, things go to her husband. But in this case, it can't go to her husband. So after she acquires it, what happens to it? It stays with her. That's all that happens. It's not like she's this black hole that just everything drops straight through her into her husband. No, no. She gets stuff and then she hands it over. But since she can't hand it over, she gets to keep it.
Gets stuck.
Yeah. And that could be the case where the Ben Sohra Mora is able to steal from his money. Okay. Now we go on to the next Mishnah.
In other words, you've got to be pretty unlucky to be a bit so.
Oh, that's the upshot of all these Gemaras.
It's pretty hard.
And we'll see, Elad, we'll see exactly how hard it is. We'll see exactly how hard it is right now.
It's the purpose of it.
Mishnah. Masnissen says, Haya Aviv Rotzeh, V'imo Eino Rotzeh. Aviv Eino Rotzeh, V'imo Rotzeh. Eino Naseh Ben Sohra Mora. At the end of the day, part of the process of a Ben Sohra Mora is that after he does all this stealing and everything, and after he's been warned to stop, at the end of the day, the father and the mother have to take him to Beit Din. And they have to say, V'neinu zeh, sorer moreh, einenu shomea, kol aviv v'chol imam. This is our son, he's a Ben Sohra Mora, he's not listening to us. Right? So the Mishnah says, it has to be both of them.
Both parents.
Both parents have to be willing to bring him. If it's only the mother, and the father doesn't want, or if it's only the father and the mother doesn't want, he can't be a Ben Sohra Mora. It has to be a joint decision. Achu Shnam wrote in.
Just to go back, so he's been doing it for 2 months?
Maximum of two months? Yeah, or a month, I mean. Or once. He may have done it once.
The parents have decided to kill him after he'd been doing this for a month?
They may have seen seeds of this beforehand, or he did it once, and then he did it again. He's been warned, he's been lashed, and he keeps doing it. That's the idea. Yeah. It's you'll be happy with the way this goes, okay? So Achi Yishnam wrote to him until they both want it. Rabbi Yehuda Merim Lo Haita Imo Ru'uya La'aviv Eino Nasa Ben Sohra Mora. Rabbi, this is a strange thing. It says, if the woman is not mat'im for the man, then he can't be a Ben Sohra Mora. What does that mean? This Eino Ru'uya. What does that mean?
They each give him different chinuch or something, no?
Maybe.
So they're talking about the relationship between the man and the wife themselves. There's some sort
from the Mishnah? I don't know. I don't know what it means from the Mishnah. Eina ra'uya la'aviv. What does that mean? So, jump into the Gemara. Gemara says, my eina ra'uya. First thing Gemara wants to know, what does that mean? So, ilema, maybe you'll say, halachically eina ra'uya. Chay ve'kritot v'chay mitot beitin. Maybe they're not supposed to be married. Eina Ruya means that that's his sister, or it's someone else's wife, or it's his aunt, right? Any of these cases, they're not supposed to be married, so maybe that's why. So the Gemara says, interestingly, sof sof avua avua ninu. Look, biologically, he's still the child. So I think it's an interesting thing that the Gemara says this, because I'll be honest, I think that was a good answer. I think you could have read the Mishnah that way, and you would have said, no, apparently that's the rule. It's as good of an answer as anything. But the Gemara doesn't accept it. It says, no, the point over here is that he's still biologically the child. It's irrelevant that they're not supposed to be married. So I would have said the fact that they're not supposed to be married, because the Torah says they're not supposed to be married, is cause for him not to be a Ben Sora Amora. I mean, what's the whole idea over here? For example, it says that both the mother and the father have to be willing to bring him to the Beit Din, right? Why? What's the philosophical reason behind that?
They've all gone to the
one of them, and he's still not. So if one of them wants to, and one of them doesn't want to,
circumstances are all right, everything's right, and it's just simply not happened.
Okay. Interesting. Mark, say that again.
All the circumstances, the kid has a proper home, everything's right, but it's still not happened.
And if one parent wanted to bring him and another parent did not want to bring him, then that's not a good home?
No, that could still be a good home.
So then what's the problem? What's the problem when one... Why is it not a Ben Sober when one wants to bring him and one doesn't?
Because there's doubt. They're not sure that he's going to be a Ben Sober.
So why does that matter?
Because you want to have... If you're judging about how he's going to be, you want to have a higher element of certainty that he's heading that way.
Oh, we're trusting the parents? We think that they're the arbiters of whether or not the child should be a Ben Sora Amora?
Based on what the parents have said.
Okay.
Well, the parents have to bring
it. I hear you. I would have said something different.
It's more difficult the parents, because the parents are going to be far less critical of their child.
That's right. And if they're both born to it, how much more so?
They're still prepared to, both of them come.
Good. That's what I would have said. I would have said, as long as one parent is still... I would have said more, though. I would have said, as long as one parent is still not willing to do it, we have some hope for the child. That's what I would have said. I would have said, if both parents have given up on him, then he's... Look, this is...
I think
if one of them is still... then there's a chance.
I think it's moving in the direction of what you all said, that we want to establish that this child was... And Mark was a good upbringing. If the parents are fighting, one is this few, one is that few, and they're
then
for each other... Then it's their fault. It's not the kid's fault.
So I want to revisit that. Yeah, so I want to revisit that and echo Usher, but I want to wait because I want to see where this goes. So the Gemara says, Okay. Ella b'shaveh la'aviv kamar. It means she's equal to her husband. What does that mean? So, Tanya Nami Hachi, there's a brayta that confirms this. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im lo haita imo shavah la'aviv b'kol u'b'mar'eh u'b'koma, einu nasa mitzvah amora. If the wife is not as tall as her husband, has the same voice as her husband, looks the same as her husband, and all that stuff, then he's not a mitzvah amora. My taima, how do we know this? This is not asking why that's relevant, it's asking how we know it. Dam rekra, einenu shomea b'koleinu. This is a very strange statement, right? It says, we know that, you know, let's give one to the Gemara. The Gemara wants to say that Bekolenu means that they have to have one voice. Okay? One voice, therefore it has to be an equal voice. But then it makes another step. It says, and also, by the way, they have to be the same height and they have to look the same.
That's very weird.
Where does it get that from?
Relevant.
Where does it get from? Where does it get from?
I think this is metaphoric. It's like they've got one united way of bringing up
kids. I was just thinking that. It's a metaphor.
As we say, you speak with one voice.
So keep going on for one second, though, just to make... Mark, you said one thing that I thought was interesting. What did you say?
How can the husband look the same as the wife?
So you said it's impossible, right? That's what you said. So Gemara says, Keman Azla... This is going to take us on after, but I want to read this first one. Keman Azla... That means, like, who does it go? Keman Azla, Hadatanya Ben Sora Amora lo hayav lo atid lihiyot. According to whom is the following statement said? Ben Sora Amora never happened and never will happen. V'lama nechtav, and therefore, if that's the case, why was it written in the Torah if it's never going to happen? Drosh, v'kabel skar. Who said that? Keman, ki Rabbi Yehuda. Must be Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because what did Rabbi Yehuda say? This. He said that they have to look exactly the same. So out of all the things that we noticed that are strange about the Ben Sora Amora, this is what, you know, apparently broke the straw that broke the camel's back. Completely impossible. Rabbi Yehuda is saying that they have to look exactly the same, they have to sound exactly the same, they have the same height. That can't happen. Rabbi Yehuda must be the author of the statement that Ben Sora Amora never happened. There's another one. Ibait Ema, or maybe you want to say Rabbi Shimon, he. The Tanya, Amar Rabbi Shimon, Vachim Ibn Nesha, Achal Zet, Tartema, Batsar, Vishat, Achatzi, Log, Yain, Haitalki, Avrit, Ema, Motzino, Tolesaklo. This is what you all said. What, you think that just because he ate a little meat and drank a little wine, the parents are going to bring him to Skila? What kind of parents are these? Ela, Lohayav, Loati, Lihot, Vlam, Nichtov, Drosh, Vikabel, Schar. So it's either Rabbi Huda, because what he says is crazy, or it's Rabbi Shimon, because he finds the whole idea incredible that they would actually do this for that. Now, I'll just finish off over here for this part. Amar Rabbi Yonatan ani re'itiv v'yashavti al kivro. Rabbi Yonatan jumps in and says, actually, it has happened, and I sat on the kever of that Ben Sora Mora. And we're not going to have time to... I didn't put any of this on the sheet, so I'll just quickly say it outside. There's a problem with Rabbi Yonatan's statement. Two problems, actually. What did he say? He said, I saw him and I sat on his kever. One problem you could probably guess.
Was he a Kohen?
He was a Kohen. So Rabbi Yonatan was a Kohen, so he shouldn't be sitting on any of the kever. But the truth, the second problem is nobody should be sitting on anybody's kever. You're not allowed to be nehene from a dead body, and the kever is included in that. So sitting on it is a no-no. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to, you know, lean on it or anything like that, sit on it or anything like that. And so he has no business doing this. So the Rishonim generally just say that he was being metaphorical, that he was just, you know, he was saying that I saw it and I was right there. Now, you know what, let's keep going so we get to the end of the Gemara and then we'll get to the sources.
Okay, even though he didn't say he shouldn't be sitting on a grave, he saw one.
Yeah, he said he saw one. He also said he sat on the grave, but he at least saw one. Now, the next part of the Gemara, because this is a well-known Gemara. These are the three things, right? That we've seen the first of the three things that supposedly never happened, if not for Rabbi Yonatan. Okay, next one. Keman Azla, who said Haditanya Iranidachad lo hetav lo atid liyot ulam nechtava drosh v'kabaschar. Second one, Iranidachad. What's an Iranidachad? The whole city is about the Avodah Zarah, and you have to raise it to the ground. The men, the women, the children, all the money, all the houses, everything has to be burned to the ground. So never happened, never will happen. Apparently, it's written to Drosh V'Kabaschar. We're gonna find out what that means. Kiman, who said that? Meaning, why is it impossible for the Irani Dachat to happen? You know, we could imagine it happening. Kiman Rabbi Eliezer, technical reasons. The Tanya Rabbi Eliezer Omer Kol Ir Sheyesh Ba Afilu Mezuzah Achat Eino Naset Ir Anidachat. If a city has even a single mezuzah, then it can't become an Ir Anidachat. My Taima Amer Kra Vet Kol Shlala Tikbots El Toch Rechava Vesarafta Baesh V'Kev In The Ika Mezuzah Lo Efshar Dechtiv Lo Tasun Kein Lashem Elokeichem. Won't happen. In other words, any city that has a mezuzah cannot be burned. And since it's inconceivable that there's going to be an entire Jewish city with no mezuzah, Rabbi Eliezer concludes, "Lo haya v'lo nivra, v'lo atid liyot." Who chimes in?
Has to be a Jewish city.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Who chimes in? Exactly who we'd expect to. I'm Rabbi Yonatan, ani ritia, v'yashavti al tila. I saw it, and I sat on the sign. Tila is...
It's on the hill,
on the mound, like the leftover. It's rubble. I sat on the rubble. That's the second one. Kaman Azla Datanya Beit Hamenuga Lo Ayav Lo Atid Liyot. Beit Hamenuga.
Sarat.
Only in Eretz Israel, and you know, you get to the point where the Lashon Hara causes your house to have nega. Lo Atid Lo Lamin Echtav Jorav Shkab Eschar. Kaman Rabbi Elazar Ben Rabbi Shimon Datan. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Omer. It won't ever be a bayit menuga unless you have the ketem, the nega rather, should be 2x1, I think, or it ends up being 2x1 in a corner. Okay, so it has to go across the corner and be 2x1, and the Rishonim just say that's it. That it's just unlikely that will ever happen. Okay, and I'm not, you know, a negaologist, but apparently that is never going to happen. Now, how does he know that that's the only condition where it's going to be burnt to the ground, where it's going to be destroyed, rather? Where you have a bayit menuga? So he says, because look at the Torah, it says, "My time with Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, k'tiv kir, uchtiv kirot." Ezo kir, shu kirot. It says kir, but then it says kirot. How can you have a kir that's also kirot? Answer: it's a corner. It's a one wall, which is two walls, where it meets. Avi Omer, Zek Aaron Zavit, the Tanya Amar, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok, Makom Haya Betchum Aza. So Rabbi Elazar, this time it's not Rabbi Yonatan, but it's Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzadok, who says there was actually a place in Aza. That was an indication that it was a Bayit HaMenuga. Right, so these two Amorayim said that they actually saw it. So you have these three events that the Torah describes, three mitzvot, and it says they never happened and they never will happen, and the only reason they exist is drosh v'kabel scha. All right, let's dive in. Take a look at the sources. We will start with the Chidushi Agadot L'Maharal on Lohaita Imo Shabbat B'Kol.
Everyone have it?
So he says, what's the deal? What is this about? It says, Perish Dabar Zeh, Mashanatan Hashem Yitbarach B'Torah Mitzvat Zara Mora Shehu Sar Min HaDerach Yashar. The idea is that he, you know, he goes off the path. V'tzarech, now here's the rub, right? Tzarech sheyeh, shelo yeh, right? Tzarech sheyeh, o lo yeh, hasiba l'zeh aviv v'imo. It has to be that the parents are involved or not involved. V'kasher ein aviv v'imo shavim b'kol. So here it should be clear from the context. Kasher ein aviv v'imo shavim b'kol. When they're not equal, what happens? Im kein ein zivug shalehem zivug shaveh gamur, ke hazivug ha-shaveh tzrichim shiyu domim v'shavim. It's not a proper partnership because they're not equal. V'lakach tzrichim shiyehem shavim b'kol u'mar b'koma, ke ha-koma nireh shehem shavim b'guf sh'ha-koma l'guf v'ha-kol sh'mimenu ha-dibur sh'al yado ha-adam nefesh chaya. I put this on here just to show you how the Maharal would deal with this. It's a metaphysical approach. What does it mean if they are equal and he still pulls away? What does it mean? It means that the zivug itself is the problem. You see, Hasibul Azav, Ivimo, and Alara Shah Zivog and Oshava, Vedabaza, maybe Shia Ben Sora, Mora, Lakach, Eno Nidon, Ben Sora, or Mora. If they are physically the same, and the boy still comes out wrong, if everything is correct, right? If everything is proper, and the boy still comes out wrong, that means that he shouldn't be here, right? The Zivog is fundamentally messed up. And therefore, maybe sheyeh ben sora mora lekach eino nidon beben sora mora. Now I'm confused. Yeah. I see. It means it's not his fault. So hold on. So let's just follow the Maharal. Yeah, I know. It's very confusing. So let's follow the Maharal. He's suggesting that kasher ein azivug zivug shave im aben sar min aderach hashave asiba laze aviv v'imo. It's their fault because it's not Shaveh, and that's what caused him to be Ben Sora. Okay, good. The Maharal is saying is that when they are unequal, then it's not his fault, it's their fault. Okay? Which, who said? It's not his fault. A couple of you said, right? And Usher, you had a problem with that, right?
Yeah.
So, good. So the Maharal is saying, it's no good when they're not equal because then it's not his fault that he's bad. But the Usher is going to point out that...
It's irrelevant.
Why is it irrelevant?
Because we're not questioning the fault. We're doubting his progression.
Exactly. What we're worried about is... it doesn't matter why. The point is that he's going to end up being a bandit and a robber and a murderer.
Yeah, it's not a punishment. It's a progression.
Oh, so does anybody remember the previous shir where we talked about whether it was a punishment or not?
Yeah.
Right. I think we came to one conclusion that said it is a punishment, but the nature of the punishment takes into account the future. So in other words, he has to be punishable. Maybe that's what Maharal is saying. He has to be punishable in order for us to get off the ground. We can't just go around killing people because we're worried about where they're going to end up. They have to at least be somewhat liable for who they are.
Right, there was the free folks.
Yeah.
Or you can say that if you removed him from this situation, he wouldn't follow that same progression.
Right. There is maybe there's hope for him. In other words, let's put him somewhere else, and maybe he won't turn out so bad. Maybe it's the parents' fault that he's like this. Right. Once he gets out of the home, then he'll work out okay. That's possible. Now, what's the idea of them being equal? So the Maharal says they're like physically equal, and that's an indication of whether of the fact that they are supposed to be together. All right, fine. Maharshal gives a totally different answer. Think of the Maharshal.
But what does that mean, physically?
You know, I can't say. I don't know whether it means they have to be identical. I don't know if it means they have to be identical. I don't know if it means they have to be identical. I guess it means they have to look similar. Don't know. I can't say. But the Maharshal will help us a little bit with it. The Maharshal will help us a little bit with why it's important for them to look the same. So he says, this is our other question. Fine, the Gemara proves from the Pasuk that they have to have the same voice. But how does that lead us to saying that they have to have the same height and the same appearance? How does that follow? Second of all, Rabbi Shimon de Kamar Bevechim Ipnei, Hu Tamua, Lechoy Meina Rawi Lisakel, Lama Katva Torah, Shehu Ra'ui, Velo Shaykh Bazadrosh. Also, what's Rabbi Shimon talking about? The parents are just following what the Torah said to do. The Torah said to bring them to the Beis Din. So that's why the parents are going to do that. Okay, fine. Venire, Ki Aben Sorer, Af Shehochichu Oto Aviv Vimo, Kama Pa'amim. What happened? You think that the parents never said anything? They did. They tried to get the boy to change. They gave him tochacha, but it didn't work. So they rebuked him many times. Kemefurish b'kra v'yisru oto. They will rebuke him, aviv v'imo, and he doesn't listen. Amar kimi olam lo chicho otan shnehem el aviv. What will he say? He'll say in his own defense, ma'olam lo chicho oto shnehem el aviv o imo. V'omer ilu o chichu shnehem hayam mekabel tochacha. So what does he say? He says, let's think for a second. What happens? The boy is going to be brought to Beit Din, right? And he's going to say, they never gave me rebuke. Me'olam la'ochicho otishneha. Ela aviv o imo. It was either my mother or my father. And he'll say, if they would have both given me rebuke, then I would have accepted it, or will say for him, that if they would have both given him rebuke.
At the same time.
Or at least if he knew that they were both giving him rebuke. The problem over here, though, is that because they have the same voice, every time one of them talks, he doesn't know which one it is.
Especially because they look alike.
Sounds like both of them. And because they look, that's his point. They have to also, in order for this to work, they have to both look alike and have the same height. So in other words, he's kind of like, it's like Charlie Brown, like, wah, 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 wah. But they both sound like that, and they both look like that because he can't see them right. Right?
But he's flipped it again. He's saying that they He's saying that if they do look and sound the same, then it doesn't work. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda was, who said that it only works if they look and sound the same.
Yeah. No, he's saying at the end of the day, though, because we're going to require that they literally look and sound the same, it's never going to happen. Why is it important that they look and sound the same? In order for the boy to be able to say this.
No, but if they look and sound the same...
We're saying that if they do sound the same...
Then he can't distinguish.
That's the boy's get out, but we're saying... No, that shouldn't be the get out. We're saying that Ben Zoromo only applies when they are of equal voice, equal physical appearance.
He's flipped it. I think you'd have a pretty good, if I did look and sound exactly the same, I think you'd have a pretty good get out right then. Pretty messed up kids.
Yeah.
What do you want from me?
It depends. Come on. He doesn't look the same. What chance did I have?
You can't be dead.
He doesn't look the same as well.
She looks like my sister. She looks the same as well. Look at the horror story.
She would probably go to bathe in silk and ask to be.
Yeah. All I could do is run away and steal my green bread and meat.
You can't believe who I stole from my brother, I stole from him or from her. Seemingly wrong with grain chairs and wrong with grain chairs.
No, the point is the opposite. If they didn't look the same, then he always has to get a jail free card. Why? That's the Mashal's point. Why? Why? Because he can always say, hold on 1 second. Yeah.
If they don't look the same, then he has a get out card. Because he can say, look, they're unequal.
No, but that's not what the Maharsha
said. He's saying the get out is that he didn't know, he could never say they're both called because I didn't know which one was which because they were the same voice. But it's good, he's only confused if they were the same voice.
Spoke.
Isn't this all metaphorical?
They both spoke.
So the Maharsha doesn't see it as metaphorical. There is a way to see it as metaphorical.
Yeah,
but
basically
the voice can be
unequal.
The excuse is that they
don't
know who was talking to.
If they had their own thoughts, then you could say one was intimidating the other one, or one was able to pressure the other one, and therefore it wasn't the two of them together. That would make sense.
Right. That's how I thought of it as well. I mean, that's the most common approach, really. And looking at the Gemara, is to see it as metaphorical that if they don't have the same voice, if you don't feel like they're both talking to you and giving you over the same values, then no wonder he turned out that way. It has to be that, like you said, all the conditions are correct, such that. Although I think there's an alternative to that. I think the opposite is also true. How can opposites both be true? But if they're both always giving over the same thing, then you kind of get the feeling that, like, he doesn't have... Sometimes it's best when there's a good cop and a bad cop parent. Mm-hmm. And when both parents are one or the other, then you don't have a balance, right? So in a way, if we wanted to go actually along the other lines, that what we're concerned with here is whether or not the boy is actually going to turn into a Ben Sora Mora, then the fact that the parents have the same voice could actually be a problem. Mm. Right, and would actually cause him to become a Ben Sora Mora. I'm just suggesting that if you have a situation where the parents are always saying the exact same thing to the boy, and he doesn't feel like either one is ever on his side or anybody's ever defending him or anything like that, then
that's the dissenting voice in the Beit Din.
Exactly. Exactly. You have to always have one parent getting angry, and then the other parent calmly. If they're both angry all the time, or they're both calm all the time. But that's assuming the other way. That's assuming that we're trying to make sure he doesn't become a Ben Sora Mora and not trying to find excuses for him. It's very confusing, Maharsha. I agree with you. I remember having trouble with it the first time around. But that's the Maharsha. We do have to read the second half, though. Right. So this is the part where Rabbi Shimon says, what's going on? Why would the parents bring him to Beit Din? Right? So take a look what he says. Rabbi Shimon dekamar v'chimim neisha achal... What's the idea? Obviously, the point is that the Torah knows what's going to happen with the boy, and so that's why they should bring him to Beit Din. So why are you asking why they bring him to Beit Din? The Torah said so. Ella, the ka'amar da avivimo vade de lo yotziu oto bishvil zele skila shehem vade lo yagil lesof da'ato v'yamusha sofa lachzor midrachav ha'ra'im v'yu chasim alav. The Torah knows that the father and the mother will not bring him to Beit Din, right? Because they're definitely going to have Rachmanis on him. They're not, no father and mother will bring him to Beit Din. And that's exactly what Rabbi Shimon says, that it's not going to happen. They'll never fulfill this. Now, take a pause for a second. What did the Gemara say? It says, Joshua Kabaschar. What does Joshua Kabaschar mean? What do you think it means? Another mitzvah, right? Another mitzvah. Take a look at the Maharsha says it means. Y'all, what does the Maharsha say it means? Read.
Read. Yeah.
Who's Drosh V'Kabel Schar?
The parents.
The Torah is telling the parents, be careful with this one. Be careful. He's showing indications that bad things are going to happen. We tell you, Al Pidin, you should take him to Beit Din. But if you're not going to take him to Beit Din, at the very least, make some changes. Something needs to be done. Drosh v'kabaschar. Who's it talking to?
The parents.
Not us. That's true, but parents. That women get a reward for sending their children to Talmud Torah and for sending their husbands to the Beit Midrash. That it's up to the parents to educate the children. It's a really creative way of reading Gemara. It doesn't work with the rest of the Drosh of the Kabbalah scars. But it works very well over here. But look at the last line, the very last line. This is the money one. Aval, this is where the Marsha live, I don't know, 400 years ago, I guess? Something like that? Rav Shimon Idols? This is 400 years ago, okay? Aval bezman hazeh. Ain not nim leiv lazeh. B'chol echad mechapel b'no. Av shu be'emet chayav malkut mitat beitin. Ein mochigin otan. B'narim holchem rov yomein b'bidl talmud Torah v'arminin per kol kitvei lochar b'yushlaim el b'shul shebidlu bo tinoko shebeit rabo. He's standing on the lawn. Get off my lawn, right? This is 400 years ago. They were talking about parents being too easy on the kids when I was a boy. Unbelievable.
They call it curling parents. You know, the curling is the sport.
To throw.
That's they call it curling parents. They make every effort.
Oh, right.
You should be at least. Yeah.
So I think that's amazing lines in our shop. And he's saying, you're all raising a bunch of kids that are all Chayim Misa. What would he say about 2019? I don't know.
I've been waiting for this explanation for a while. I don't know if I heard it. But maybe the parents, if they brought him to the Beit Din, maybe we'll shake him up.
Sure. Well, they do, actually. The truth is that the process of a Ben Sora Mur is they actually bring him once, he gets lashes.
Good.
And then, if he continues, that's when the skila happens.
I think, reading this much, I think it's completely different now. I think that if you have parents who can have lost such hope in their kid that they're going to bring him to the Beit Din to be killed, I think there's something very wrong with the parents.
Sure. But he's not saying
that.
He's not saying it's not going to happen. If that actually happened, and then the parents have brought a 13.5-year-old kid to the Beit Din to be killed,
and there really is no hope for him.
They think there's no hope for him, but I think they're as much to blame if they've lost hope in their kid.
But that's not my mashak. The reason that we do it, though, is
to prevent what he's
going to do. I think it's as bad a reflection on the parents as the child.
Maybe, although we all know it's not always the parents' fault.
He's 13.
You're kid to no,
you're right.
Unless you've been driven mad by the fact that your wife sounds the same as you then.
Oh, it looks like it.
It looks like.
So in the end, the Marsha is saying he wants to bring back Ben Sora Mur, and we're saying we should be
first cousin.
He's saying no, we can't. But he's saying, look, we're raising a bunch of kids that obviously he's being. He's magzim, but I can't find the English word for magzim.
He's exaggerating.
That's it. That's what I'm looking for. He's obviously exaggerating, but I think his point is well made. Yeah. And I think it's just hysterical that this is, from hundreds of years ago. Could have been written
people
yesterday.
People don't change.
It was written yesterday.
No, it's been much better today.
Yeah. Anyways, here's another approach. This is a totally mystical approach. This is pretty cool, though. The Torah Chaim. Look at what he says. He says, we don't understand it. But then he says, with Zohar, okay, what does the Zohar have to say about Ben Sora Mur? Parshas Kitetze Ita v'tafsubo aviv v'imo, tanyanan debahai shata da'amar kutchabicho la'moshe. Amar Moshe mari da'alma it abba da'avid kedin lebrei. Bahai shata ramaz le'liofi. In other words, this is a conversation between Moshe and God. The pasuk starts with Ki Ish Ben Sora Mur. Who's the Ish? God. God is the Ish. Dechtiv Hashem, Ish Milchama. Ben, Da Yisrael. Who's the Ben? That's the Jews. Soramura, Dechtiv Ki Kapra, Sorara, Sarar Yisrael. They're so rare. Eneno Shomea Bekol Aviv Ubekol Imo, Dakit Shabricho Veknesset Yisrael. Knesset Yisrael is the spiritual entity of Klal Yisrael, which is connected to God. V'katzav v'sefer ma'aracha sh'atif eret or yisod tzurat zachar v'ateret tzurat nekeva. Okay, basically, the bottom line over here is that it's seen as a metaphor for God's relationship with Bnei Israel, who are always rebelling. And what's interesting, he says, the whole Gemara that says that it has to be the same, the mother and the father, so he says that's because God is really all one. And so of course he's, of course it's identical. That's what it means, it's identical. Kevin the call shavin bein and marav v'kol and bein and shavin ki hu yitzbarach hakol echad b'li shum pirud ba'olam. Just a nice idea. I don't know how nice it is, but it's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Now, getting back to the Drosh v'kabla schar business. Okay, so Maharsha notwithstanding, it does seem to be talking to us, right? And the idea would be something along the lines of, look, it won't ever happen, but you learn another sugya, you get more mitzvot, you get more Talmud Torah by learning another sugya. What's our problem with that? Any problem with that? Or is it fine?
There's lots of practical Talmud Torah you can do.
Okay. So if we would have had 610?
Not good.
All right. Fine. So here's Rav Avraham Erlanger. Rav Shechter has something very similar to this in his Ginat Egos. Here's Lichora, im einu noge lemaase, al ma mekabel schar. If it's not, it's because of Ram. That's fine. If it's not lemaisa, then what are you getting rewarded for? Uma erech hadrush, what's like, it's a game? Umize mochichem ha'yisod. I know you already know the answer, but he says, this is where it comes from. Shalimu la Torah, einu emtsai greida, bechtei leida malasot. Torah, learning Torah, is not just a hechi timtsa, just a way, a mechanism for knowing what to do. Ela mitzvah b'fnei atzma, it's its own mitzvah. Shigam kol ma she'enu nogea lamasa mikol makom torahi, v'chol teva mitzvahi, v'schar gadol mitzad etzem limud. Just the pure learning, that act of learning is itself a mitzvah, besides for knowing what to do. Chutz ma shigam yesh bo mitzvah mitzad demevi lidei maase, ayin beit ha-levi, ala Torah parashat mishpatim. What he's referring to is the beit ha-levi, who says that in the words na'aseh v'nishma, are hidden two forms of Talmud Torah. There's a Talmud Torah which is done to know what to do, na'aseh. And then there's a Talmud Torah, which is done Nishma. Just to know what, you know, just to know the Torah, which is Nishma. They're both Nilmod. They're both Nilmod Lasod and Nilmod Lishma. Two forms of Talmud Torah that the
Mitzvah is impossible to fill, or the fact that
it will never happen. It's predicted that it will never happen because it's unlikely. It's so statistically impossible.
Unlikely, but it's not.
Statistically impossible. Statistically. Can't see it ever happening. Not physically impossible, obviously.
Totally
unlikely. All the conditions that are put there.
Absolutely. Incredibly unlikely. But I mean, the fact that there is really the remaining chance that it could potentially happen, that's a reason to learn halacha, right?
Okay. But it's acknowledged by the Gemara that it will never happen, so it seems strange.
But there's obviously value in the concept, whether it's practical or not.
Oh, good. So, I understand what you're saying.
That's Rabbi Yonatan.
So,
yeah. Rabbi Yonatan.
In the same way that person hasn't got
parents. 100%. What do you mean by value, though?
For example, the person that hasn't got parents has still got a chiyuv to learn about kibud avim because there's value, even if he can't practice those mitzvahs, there's still a concept there which is worthwhile and important to
your hadut. So just to be very sharp, so what you're saying is the value is that there's some principle being taught by the halakha, even if it can never happen in life, right? Similar to saying, like, look, we read a Gemara about oxes goring other oxes. I don't own any axes. Like, I'm never going to own any axes. Like, what's the point of learning this?
Like,
the answer is because you learn principles, which will help you in other cases. So maybe we learn parenting principles based on the halachos of Ben Torah Baruch.
That's not what he's saying. Like,
no, it's not what he's saying. Not in this paragraph, no.
Yeah.
Like ayin tachat ayin. It's also...
No, but that is
it was explained that it was money and it was only said in order to show how serious and so on.
Oh, I see.
But even if it didn't happen, that's you're living in a cave all your life, where you don't have to learn any mitzvahs because you can never apply them. As in, there's something obviously of value to them.
But you're still assuming that there was a place to apply it to, just not this specific halakha. But you can learn from it something that you can apply later. But he seems to be saying, forget that. Forget that. Just the act of learning itself is worthwhile. Of course, what?
What about Rabbi Yonatan? Everybody neglects
This is within Joshua Kabbalah.
Why is it considered one of the mitzvahs? I agree that once it is there, we have a...
Good. There is something strange here. In other words, that's very nice that you can get schar for learning the mitzvah. But if the mitzvah is never going to happen, then why does it exist? We didn't ask, why do we have to learn it? Seder, we have to learn it because it's in the Torah. God said, there's a mitzvah, I understand. Once it's in the Torah, I get it. Why did God put it in the Torah if it's never going to happen? You can't tell me, Joshua Kabbalah Schar, because then, okay, so then there should be a halacha about flying spaghetti monsters. Right? There should be such a halacha. It won't happen. But there, here's some more Schar.
How did you come up with
it? Richard Dawkins. or it was Calvin and Hobbes. I forget which one. I think it's Richard Thomas. I don't know. Anyways, the point is, if it's just arbitrary, then it shouldn't matter. Unless Asher is right and there's actually some kernel of truth, some kernel of something you can take from it, even if it never happened, you know, specifically like this, you can take something from it. Then I'd understand why it would be in the Torah, even if it will never happen. So take a look what he says. V'hine agon of Yisrael Salant, Hikshasham, Haim Ein Dai Bishar Chalkei Torah. He said, this is pretty much what he says. He says, what, we don't have enough Torah? Afim Elef Shanim Yechi Adam. Even if you live for 1,000 years, Lidrosh Mehem L'Kabbalah Schar, you would find plenty to learn. Ubeterut Romash Meshazeh Bishvil Alimur Azeh Atzmo Shenedel Lidrimur Torah Mitzar Atzma Mitzvah Begeder Chok Gam Kshalon Yitzrach L'Asiyah. So he suggests that, no, maybe it's... it seems to be that he's assuming that it's just for the sake of the limar. Amnam Tzarchiyon. What about that one? He's almost suggesting that, let me backtrack for a second. It sounds like what he was originally saying was that this halakha actually teaches you the principle of Joshua Kabbalah Schar. In other words, imagine that all we had was Ben Tzora Mora. It was the only exception, and that would never happen. So what you would learn from Ben Tzora Mora is that it's worth it to learn, even if you're not going to actually do anything. But he says, if that's what we're learning, then we don't need three of those. We only need one. Yeah. If the only principle we're learning from Ben Tzora Mora is Joshua Kabbalah Schar, we only need one of those. We don't need three. So he says, why do we need the three? V'aniyah v'azek yediyat ha-Torah hi yediyat Hashem. All right, this is where Rav Shechter has in his Ginnus Egos, it comes from the Baal HaTanya as well, that the knowledge of Torah is actually the knowledge of God. The Kamavur Baramban Bahakdama the Torah, the Ramban writes in his Akdama to the Torah, Babirchat the Torah, Anu Omrim Viniya, Anachnu Vitzitzainu Kulanu de Shmecha, Vlomde Torah Techa. That's Mduyak, because the Ramban writes in the beginning of his Akdama in the Torah that the whole Torah itself is Shmosav Shokadish Barakwa, it's the name of God. And every single letter that you learn in the Torah is actually learning God's name, okay, which is like learning God. And so even if we don't understand it, every single element of the Torah is part of God's body, so to speak. It's part of his essence. The Sefer Torah shechaser ba'ot achad psula, the Ramban says, we don't pass it in that way. Ka'kol yachad shlemut achat. When I say we don't pass in that way, not all letters were created equal. But for the most part, what the Ramban is saying is that every single letter is essential because it's part of God's name. You take out a letter out of his name. How do you feel it when your name is spelled wrong? It's not your name, right? V'itachin sheparsha zu ma'alatav v'tikunah v'hashpatha idei limudah v'hakol asa Hashem liten tzachar kitach l'datov hakol l'hitiv imabriyot. We should learn it because it's part of God's wisdom. Of course you can get schar for doing things that are lamasa. Obviously, there in the other realms of Torah, there's also the kiyum. But here, there's just limud ha-Torah for the sake of knowing God. And now he's going to say Asher's point. There's a lot you can learn from these parashiyot. Even if it doesn't come to a skila itself. The principle of Nidon Hashem Sofo, that such a concept can exist, Nidon Hashem Sofo, we should think about where our actions lead. That's one of the lessons of Mitzrayim Moreh. Realize that it, you know, don't just look at what happens right now. Look at what happens years in the future. V'chumrat chaburat Hashayim. And all the halachot about Ben Tzora Mara, that he's only going to be a Ben Tzora Mara if he has bad friends, if he has good friends, if he's eating with his good friends, that he's not a Ben Tzora Mara. That tells you about the value of good friends. Umala sudat mitzvah v'chumrat inyan zol v'sora. And if he's eating it as part of a sudat mitzvah at a siyum or at the Ibur Hashana or something like that, then he can't be a Ben Tzora Mara because it has such a great influence on him that he won't end up being a bandit. These are just principles. These are conditions that God put. We can't understand all of them, but some of them we can understand and we can learn from them. And also you can learn from Negayim and you can learn from Yarni Dachat. He says, it means all of these things. It means that you should learn it so you can get schar for it. And it also means learn it up so that you can, you know, get out of it what is nogei lemasa, what does apply and what does exist even in the real world, even if this halakha doesn't show up. Yeah?
I think this is a bit, sure, is a bad example of drosh v'kabbalah schar.
Why?
Two reasons. First of all, I think you could, there's just so much you can learn from it, as you're saying here. And also, it is may never happen, but it is possible. It could happen.
Right.
And it serves as a good sort of extreme marker of where, exactly what you're saying, where things could go. And then, you know, if your kid starts messing up at home, you say, listen, you know, this is something that is contemplated within the realms of teachings of the Torah. And, you know, things could get there. You got to be careful. You got to look up. You got to think about what you're doing. Think about your life. It's not, I mean, there are other things that we learn that are pure drosh v'kabbalah schar that could not are highly unlikely, but impossible to have practical application.
So right. Then that would be even stranger, though, right?
No, that would be like pure drosh v'kabbalah schar, and this, I think, is a bad example of drosh v'kabbalah schar.
Look, whether something is statistically impossible or physically impossible,
maybe.
The same thing. That's what the Gemara thinks. It needs an answer. In other words, once Rabbi Shimon says, look, this is never going to happen, so then the Gemara says, well, we need a reason for it to be done. That's what it's saying.
That's just an example. I'm just saying, I think there are better examples of drosh v'kabbalah schar.
Should be still going.
It
has
stopped.
But it hasn't. It's still going.
David said the video is
stopped. Yeah, but it's still connected. Tell him that it stopped by him. But it's still going over here. It's live and it's running. Sometimes it reconnects. Sometimes it disconnects and reconnects. But right now it's connected. Now, the Torah's Chaim is similar to the Birkas Avraham. We won't read it inside. But what's interesting is to prove his point, to prove the idea that there is this kind of theoretical Torah, that the Torah is not only practical. He points out the Gemara that I think I talked about it on Shavuos like 2 years in a row, I think. This Gemara is about how the angels wanted to keep the Torah. They didn't want Moshe to get the Torah, right? Mm-hmm. And Moshe's response to them was, look, do you need it? You have lo tirtzach, you have lo tignov. Which on the one hand sounds like he's saying it's only relevant for Basar V'dam. But on the other hand, what, the angels didn't know what it says in the Torah? He says, they know. It's more ra'oi for us, because we also need it to know what to do. But it seems to also, the angels also want it. And when Bnei Yisrael sin, the angels say, bring it back to us, God. We'll treat it properly. But if the angels can't do anything with it, then what's the point? Apparently, right. There is a point. Mm-hmm. Apparently, it is worth having, even if it's not actually, even in a cave. Even in a cave, it's worth having, if you'll never apply it. The last sugya that I was going to do, I'll just say it outside. We're not going to have time to do it inside, is the mezuzah business. No, we don't really have time for it. No, we're going to save it. If you guys want to look at it later, we can look at it later. Basically, the Margolios, Hayam of Reuben Margolios, deals with a different question. He deals with the question of why can't we burn a city with a mezuzah in it? He says, you have a pasuk that says you're not allowed to burn a mezuzah, which is a lotase, but we have an ase to burn down an irani dachat. So, what's the problem? We'll leave it there. You guys can look at the Magazine. He has like four different answers. Shkoyach.
Thank you for having us.
You can
leave
the YouTube on and then they can participate in a minute.
That's another shield for technology.
Not going to do it. We did it. We talked about it.
Where is David?
I don't know. He said he's online. I was chutzpah. You guys were promised to this spam. You guys were promised in this family, and it didn't happen. He can participate, but he can't count.
He can't say God, no.
He can participate in our
meeting, but he couldn't be called.
He couldn't be the Shnitzel. He can be Yotze Tefillah B'Tzibur.
Yes.
But he can't be counted to the minion.
Oh, yeah, but if Yotze Tefillah B'Tzibur.
That's what Rav Schachter said.
Does that have to be live?
The
shul
should have a live.
Yes,
it has to be live, of course.
So can they can say a main to brachos?
Yes.
It's like a telephone.
Live.
Yes.
Don't worry, another couple of generations, we won't have to have actually physically.
We won't even have to dive it, we just press a button.
I got this crazy video from Franklin K about this new startup of holograms. I hope it's not a joke. Because I believe it. I know I tend to be a little bit on the naive side. But it looked really crazy. It was like...
holograms? Is there
no, there was like holograms. Like, oh my God.
Well, the holograms exist. Yeah, they had them at... You remember there was like that concert, like a few years ago, they brought back Tupac Shakur, was on stage.
They did it with...
Of all people, they brought him back?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
No, they did it with Ofra Chaza in Israel on the 70s. They had that duet with her.
Oh, yeah. And I think they've done Elvis. I think they did Elvis. I think they did...
Once they did that with her father.
Yeah. It's nuts. It's live. They do it live. They do it like you're watching. It's not on TV. You're watching, and all of a sudden, there is a dead person in front of you.
There's an Asimov story like that about people just live on their own and they interact with holograms.
I see that. Do a movie night.
No, you're real about it. You could sit here and you could be in question. You could be
still Richard Dawkins.
All right.